Okay. Shh. Over here. Okay. As Hanukkah was coming up, someone last Shabbos asked me an interesting question, and I thought perhaps it's a good opportunity to talk about an important discussion. The question that he asked me was, why does the story of Hanukkah not appear in many of the, or basically all of, the traditional Jewish sources? Again, we have a little bit of the story in Masechta Shabbos and the like. Most of what we know from about the story of Hanukkah doesn't appear in, again, what we would call traditional sources, the types of things that we would learn in a Beis Medrash. And why is that? Before addressing that question, I'd like to preface it by a more general question, an interesting question, which is whether or not, or the degree to which there's a value in studying history. I think in the spring semester of last year, so we discussed the sugya of Pshat and Drash, and we noted an interesting phenomenon, which is that the Ramban, for example, oftentimes will give us two versions of a story that happened, one al pi Pshat, one al pi Drash, and he doesn't feel any need to resolve the question, even though they're clearly two different stories. When did Matan Torah take place? Not Matan Torah. When were many of the mitzvot given? Was it on Sinai or in Midbar Sinai, which was a little later? What happened to Avram in Ur Kasdim? Was he thrown into a burning fire, or was he simply expelled from the land? So what does that lack of interest indicate? And I don't want to get back into that particular, those details. We talked about them last year, but I want to look at it from a different perspective. And one possible answer you could claim, we'll see if this makes sense, is that really, in general, we don't care about knowing what happened. Studying history or the like isn't particularly important. We'll see a source in Chazal that might indicate this in a moment, but maybe we'll start with the interesting passage from the Rambam in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, the first source on your sheet. The Rambam over here discusses the statement of Rabbi Akiva that anyone who reads Svarim Chitzonim has no chelek in Olam Haba. And the Rambam says, or really I should say, the Gemara notes in one opinion on Daf Kuf on the base that Svarim Chitzonim includes things like Sefer Ben Sira, Rav Yosef Amar, B'Sefer Ben Sira Nami Asr Lemikri. So why is that? What's wrong with Sefer Ben Sira? And in general, Svarim Chitzonim, obviously, one concern with Sefer Svarim Chitzonim is that they're minus, but the Gemara seems to indicate that it's not limited to Sifrei Minos. So what's so bad about something like Ben Sira? So let's take a look at the Rambam. Again, it's the first source on your sheet. V'Svarim Chitzonim Amru Shem Sifrei Minim, V'chein Sefer Ben Sira, V'hu Hayayish Shechiber Svarim Yesh Bahem Hatulim Minyanei Hakaras Panim Ein Bam Tam V'lo To'elas El Ibud Hazman V'Havel. So what's wrong with Sefer Ben Sira? It's not Minus, it's Bittul Torah. It's a waste of time, right? Now, Agav, you might say, okay, I understand the Bittul Torah, wasting time is a big deal, but Ein Lo Chelek Lo Haba, that seems like a little bit harsh. So now is not the time to fully address this answer this question, but it tells us a very important thing. When we say certain things, Ein Lo Chelek Lo Haba, it's not necessarily always a punishment, but it's a simon l'davar. In other words, it's a simon that a person lacks certain values, for example, the value of time, which would, as such, warrant Las of Olam Haba. Las of Olam Haba for the Rambam, to a large degree, is a natural consequence of lacking, or failing in this case, to appreciate something very profound, which is we're in this world to accomplish something, and if we waste our time, it indicates that we have no appreciation for that, and that's really the cause of a Las of Olam Haba. It's not as much a punishment as much as a natural consequence of lacking this very important value. The Rambam, along similar lines in the Perashat Mishnah, says that's the reason why Misachi Bekuvia is Pasul Eidos, is because it's basically Bittul Zman. But that's just a parenthetical point. So the Rambam continues, and he says, what other things are included in this category? Kegon, Eila Svarma Nimtsoim Eitzel Ha'arav, Misipuri Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles, History Books, V'Hanagas Malachim, you know, Etiquette of the Kings, V'Yichusei Aravim, V'Sifrei Hanigun, Music Books. Okay. Don't tell those who are musicologists. Agav, the Gra thought that there's a lot of value in chachma of music, but that's also a different issue. Kriyot ben mesfarim she'in b'hem chachma v'lo to'elas gufani ela ibar azman bilvad. So interestingly, again, the Rambam over here includes among the svarim that are mamish a waste of time seems to be books of history. So is there a value in studying history? Take a look at the next source. It's a Gemara in Yoma. The Gemara is the following Shaila. Ketzad Hilbishan. Here we're talking about the Shaila of how Moshe dressed Aaron when preparing him for the service of the Mishkan. So the Gemara asks, Maid Havi Havi, who cares? Right? Whatever happened, it's irrelevant. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have to find a nafkamina. Ketzad elaketzad elbishan lasad lavo nami, lakshiyashavo aron uvanav umoshe imam. You know, what do we need to resolve this question now? When the shayla comes up, we'll ask Moshe Rabbeinu. Which is another interesting point in terms of when Tchias HaMeisim is going to take place, but that's for another discussion. Ela, ketzad elbisham lamizbar krai. No. We actually do have to know how to teach the psukim, and that's valuable. So the Gemara says it's a machlokas exactly how it happened. So the Gemara seems to be telling us that we're not really interested in what happened in the past. Maidave ave. Now, obviously, an important point here, which we need to figure out, is does that mean we have no interest in the past, or some... You know, we're not interested in everything that happened in the past. Certain sort of very technical details are of no interest to us. Doesn't mean we have zero interest in past events. So we need to figure out what's the scope of Maid Havi Havi. But the basic point, this Gemara is saying, is we're interested in how to read the psukim. So if there's a shail of how to interpret the psukim, that's certainly valuable. If there's some type of nafkamina la halacha, that's certainly valuable, but if it's not relevant to Taitz the Psukim, it's not relevant to Lalach Lamaisa, then my Dehave Ave, who cares? I'm not going to get into this too much, but I included here for the Chevra who's learning Chulin, the next source, you have an interesting machlokas between Rashi and Rash L'Chaira about the scope of my Dehave to some degree. The Gemara over there asks, what was the halacha for Bsar Nechira that Echnisul Aretz? Because Bsar Nechira was Mutter in the Midbar, Aser in Eretz Yisrael, then there was a tzivu in Shechita, it's Machlokas Tanayim, but that's one opinion. And the question is, what happened if you had Bsar Nechira, you brought into Eretz Yisrael, right? Agav, the Chidas thinks that's a nafkamina maybe for could you eat leftovers for Shabbos during the 9 days, right? In other words, it's always a big problem. Like, you have lots of Shabbos leftovers, and now it's 9 days, you can't eat meat, so what do you do with all your stuff? You throw it out? So the Chida thinks maybe it's going to be Tali in the Shaila. But anyhow, so we have a machlokas. So Rashi says, who cares? So Rashi says, drosh v'kabel schar, which is another interesting concept, not for now. Chayadua, the Gemara says that about, according to one opinion, about Ben Soro Mora, the like, in other words. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that, like, if there's no relevance at all, it's still valuable? Or does that Gemara possibly mean no? we learn very important lessons from the halachos of Ben or Sohar Umar, even if they're not practically relevant. So what does Rashi mean over here by Drosh V'Kabel Schar is an interesting question. But without going into too much details, the Rashi over here disagrees with Rashi. He says, what are you talking about, Rashi? Amai Dave Have, and there has to be some importance to this question. And the Rush, therefore, tries to come up with some type of interesting nafkamina. Not the Chidah's nafkamina, because the minhag of not eating meat during the 9 days is post-Talmudic, but some type of Talmudic nafkamina for the Shaila. Anyway, what's perhaps maybe the most extreme place where you see this notion is the Zohar, which is the next source. Now, we read the Zohar a little bit earlier in the Zman, so we're not going to reread it, but this is the Zohar that talks about Har Ararat, that the Teva landed on Mount Ararat. The Zohar says, like, who cares?
149.
What's 149?
The Zohar, the same
one. Yeah, it's on your source sheets over here. 149b. So, if there are any extra source sheets, pass them up or down. Yes, it's the same Zohar. And we talked about the point that the Zohar not only says that, like, the Torah doesn't tell us irrelevant details, expressing this idea of Maida Ave Ave, but if you think that's, like, what the Torah is all about, then Tipach Ruchei and the like. Now, I think if we look at the next source afterwards, after the Zohar on your sheets, you have a piece from the Gra, which doesn't mean to say that it's of zero value, but rather it's not the main point of the Torah. Take a look at this Gaon over here. Lahavin mashal umalitza ve'achshav ba'levar inyanei habina. He's explaining the pasuk in Mishlei. Mashal umalitza shneihem b'torah shebichsav. So he's telling us what's the difference between a mashal and a melitza. The mashal who sipurei haTorah. So it's fascinating, right? How do you categorize the stories of the Torah? Do you characterize them as history? That's what, you know, I would have said. But the Gaon over here is saying, no, you know how we characterize the stories? As a mashal. As a mashal. The Hamelitza, who hapnimi. The Tzarech Lavin Shneim. Shalolios Makhish Pshutei Asipurim. Avalios Mamin Osam Kavayasam. So, first of all, even though we're calling the stories of the Torah a mashal, that doesn't mean they didn't happen. Of course they happened. And this is actually a very important point relating back to what we talked about, I think, several weeks ago about Maaseh Bereishis and the like, and that these stories being a mashal. The Gaon says that when we call the stories of the Torah mashal, they happened. Pashut, they happened. So why are we calling them a mashal? Why are they coming a mashal? Because that's not their goal, and that's not the purpose. And the Torah doesn't tell us these stories to tell us their history. Im shalotoil me'od yediyasan, knowing the stories is not particularly valuable. So he doesn't say it's worthless, but it's not particularly valuable. It doesn't help us very much. And what phrase does the Gaon cite to express the sentiment? Mai dehave have, right? What we just said, mai dehave have, who cares? Whatever was, was. Now, this is, I think, important because, you know, if I told you that I was looking at the weather forecast for the 1984, you know, what was the weather like in December 1984, you know, on this date, what's today's date? December something, December 12th in 1984, the weather was, you know, it was 42 degrees. So you'll tell me, my dave ave, right? But the Gaon is saying that even about the stories of the Torah, and that's why they're called a mashal. because it's not particularly valuable to know the stories. Aval de osenu k'tzaros melahasik to'eles pshutehen. So, what then is the point of the story? To understand the melitza. And obviously this could be true on many levels. There's value in understanding the melitza to teach us lessons about how to live our lives. It's valuable on the level of pnimius ha-Torah, which the Gra spends a lot of time focusing on, and that's what the Zohar is referring to over here. But whatever it is, the point is that it's not the stories. And that's why, for example, you know, we might say something like Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, which basically says we're going to put priority on the message over the chronology, because that's the goal. If you were writing a history book, so you wouldn't write, you know, you'd be very medactic in terms of the order. So maybe that's the concept of my dehave have. And if so, that's why we're not so interested. Now, let me just finish my point. Now, if that's true, so there were some thinkers who claim, one of them, you know, is a modern historian, Professor Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi, who is a professor at Columbia of history, of Jewish history, and he said that, look, you want to know an interesting thing? You want to know something very interesting? You look at the Jewish sources, and you'll find almost nothing on Jewish history, especially in the post-biblical world, in the biblical era. So you do have a discussion of Jewish history, but beyond that, you have almost none. Almost none. And the question is, like, why? Why is there no interest in Jewish history, especially in again, the post-biblical world? And he says, okay, you know, even if you're going to say that Chazal weren't so interested in it, he says it's even more interesting because in the Rishonim you don't find it. And the Rishonim blazed new paths in areas of scholarship that were not at all addressed, or at least not thoroughly addressed, by Chazal. For example, you know, we have Rishonim dealing with philosophy, with science, with linguistics, with grammar, with poetry, all of which don't have that much of a precedent in Chazal. But there's no history. And maybe nobody was learning history then, but it's not true. The Greeks were interested in history, the Romans were interested in history, the Arab scholars that many of the Rishonim studied were interested in history. And yet, more or less, we have no interest in Jewish history. Yerushalmi deals with some exceptions. You know, Yossi Pon, which is like a medieval version of Josephus, or some chronologies, but they're not really history. So why not? So Yerushalmi's theory is basically, my dehave have, right? My dehave have, who cares? That was the attitude of Chazal, and that was the attitude of Rishonim. And therefore, the only time people started studying Jewish history is in the modern period by people that to a large degree had rejected the past. And then a little bit later, there were some firm historians who had to like respond to the Freie histories. But you know, that's how we end up with whatever we have in Jewish history. But, you know, there's so little in the traditional sources. And his solution is my davi havi. Now, he says, an important chiluk, he says, well, it's not that we're no interested in history, we're interested in what he calls memory. Memory is different than history. Memory, it's like zechoinus, right? Somebody go ahead, you know, you go and you ask your grandfather what it was like in Europe, and he tells you stories about, you know, what it was like in the Lodz ghetto and what it was like before the Nazis came to power. And that's valuable. That's memory. And that's why we have a number of stories in Gemara that, you know, we could put into their historical context. You know, so we do have some stories, you know, like we started off before. We have some parts of the Hanukkah story. We have the story of Chana. And even within the story of Chana, like the fact that you see that same story take place in different sources and different eras, is in the Roman era, is in the Greek era, is a reference that they weren't so interested in history as much as memory. From a perspective of memory, it's like, you know, you hear the same story about six different gedolim, right? So if you're a historian, that's like very troubling. Like, who was it? You know, did it take place in the 18th century or the 19th century? And which one? But from the perspective of memory, that's not what's important. What's important is there's this beautiful story that teaches an important lesson about a certain gadol. Does it matter that much which gadol it was? Not as much. Not as much. So maybe that's the pshat. If we go back, for example, to the fact that we don't seem to be so interested in figuring out what happened in terms of, you know, did it happen like depicted in the Psukim or depicted in Chazal, you know, the Midrashim and the like. What actually happened, right? From a historian's perspective, it's very important to know which story took place. From the perspective that we're coming from, what's important is gleaning the Torah's message and lessons and the like, then that's not as important. Now, so that's his theory. I don't really think, I think there's some truth to that theory. I don't fully agree to it. Certainly not, let's say, in going back to that question of why, you know, the Ramban isn't that interested in events. First of all, the Ramban is interested. It relates to this week's parsha, actually. There's a question in the Ramban where Rachel was buried exactly. And if you see the Ramban, changes mind. He gives one pshat. And then later on in his commentary in Bereishis said, actually, when I got to Eretz Yisrael, I saw that the pshat I said wasn't right, now that I actually visited Kever Rachel. And he gives a different pshat. So it's not like the Ramban didn't care about what actually happened, about that he did. And when there is a certain type of the facts on the ground don't correspond to the pshat he gave, so he gave a new pshat. And the Ramban very frequently is interested in different aspects of history. The Ramban writes about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to the Jewish people through history. And that's why the Ramban famously says we have to constantly review the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim to learn those lessons, to learn about Hashgacha, to learn about Bitachon. The Ramban cites the Rambam's theory from Mor Nevuchim that the reason why the Torah listed all the Masos is so people could look back and see the tremendous Hashgacha that Klal Yisrael experienced in the Midbar. The Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Hazinu, Zchor Yemo Solam, Binu Shnos Dor Vador, tells us the story about the importance about knowing our past. And how that impacts the future. And there's no question that I think anyone who studies Jewish history will be incredibly inspired on so many levels. It deepens our faith. It teaches us the degree of Mesiras Nefesh. And even more importantly, it helps us understand the current events. By knowing our past, we can see about the future. Again, a little bit relating to Parshas Shavuah and Ramban's comments about how we look back at how Yaakov responded to Esav in terms of figuring out how we're supposed to respond to Esav. So the study of Jewish history, I think, is certainly valuable. And I don't think that the concept of my dehave have is saying that there's no value in history. I think that it's more likely intended to convey that not every prat of what happened in the past is particularly valuable. And since we study Torah to learn how to live our lives and to connect the Ribono Shel Olam, if you have a detail that doesn't teach you that, about that detail we'll ask, my dehave have, right? Doesn't really tell me how to live my life any differently if I know that the Teva landed on Mount Ararat, or if I knew the order of how Aaron dressed his children, or how Moshe dressed Aaron and his children, or, you know, the status of Bsar Nechira when the Jewish people entered Eretz Yisrael. So I don't think that's the pshat. I think that the lack of interest in sometimes resolving a historical question, like the discrepancy between pshat and drash, relates to the idea that the Torah is primarily interested in teaching us how to live and understand how to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's true. And therefore, if there's no way to resolve the question, then we don't need to resolve the question. If you have a solution, you do. In other words, there's no question that a person who gets too caught up in the details of the historical details of the story is oftentimes going to miss the point. And they sometimes lose the forest for the trees. And that is definitely correct. But it doesn't mean, there's no indication that reflects a total lack of interest in terms of history. In which case, Yerushalmi's theory, Yerushalmi also addresses this question of why do we not have any discussion of the story of Hanukkah in classical Jewish sources. Yerushalmi's answer is what we said, my dehave have, who cares? We're not interested in history. So I don't think that fully answers the question, because I think we are interested in history, even though we might not be interested in every detail about certain things, my dehave have, but I don't think that really answers the question. So is there another answer to this question of why the story of Hanukkah is omitted from traditional Jewish sources? So around the same time that Professor Yerushalmi proposed his theory on this question of why is Hanukkah omitted, across the heights, Shimon Schwab suggested another. He also asked a question, and he suggested a different theory. Take a look. It's at the bottom of the second page of your source sheets. And Rav Schwab basically said that, again, same question, the story of Hanukkah is described in detail in the Book of the Maccabees, but in Chazal there are only a few scant references of this epic drama, so why is that? And moreover, he adds, we have no authentic description by our Tanaim of the period of the Churban, the Jewish war against the Romans, the destruction of the Jewish state, the revolt, and the downfall of Bar Kochva, except for a few Agadic statements in the Talmud and the Medrash. For our historical knowledge, we have to rely on the renegade, Josephus Flavius, who was a friend of the Roman of Rome and a traitor to his people. Come think of it. Since the close of Tanakh at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, we have no Jewish history book composed by our Sofrim, Tanayim and Amorayim. The prophets and the Anshei Knesset Gedolah recorded all the events of their days, as well as the previous periods. When prophecy ceased, the recording of Jewish history stopped at the same time. Why did our great Torah leaders not deem it necessary to register in detail all the events of their period, just as Nevi'im had done before them? Now, Rav Schwab also initially suggested, though he might have changed his mind, that also relates to the missing decades from Jewish history. For those of you who know that debate, the discrepancy in terms of how many Persian kings there were and the like, and they might have even taken out a long period of time. And all that is what Rav Schwab is wondering about. And here's his solution. Here's his solution. Basically, we'll read it inside a moment, but basically the answer is that to record history would be usher, because it's Lashon Hara. There's a vast difference between history and storytelling. In other words, basically the same chiluk that Yerushalmi says, though, from a different perspective. It's not that we're not interested because of my dehave have, but rather it would be usher to write. So what we have is storytelling, what we have is memory, but we don't have history. History must be truthful, otherwise it does not deserve its name. A book of history must report the bad with the good, the ugly with the beautiful, the guilt and the virtue. It cannot spare the righteous if he fails, and it cannot skip the virtues of the villain. Right? You can't leave things out if you're going to call it history. I think the Art Scroll, for their series on Gdolim, they don't call it history, I think they call it hagiography. Right? The study of saints. So maybe, like you say, can't call it history unless you're going to tell the full story. You can't honestly say it's history unless you include everything. Include everything, your book gets banned. And this, of course, is the problem. Only a prophet speaking in God's name has the right to record the embarrassing truths of history. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could, it's true, it's Pashut, that in Tanakh, we do have a record of the shortcomings of even our greatest people, right? And, so people said, well, if the Torah can include the failings of the Avos and the like, so why can't I write a history book in which I do the same thing? And Rav Schwab's answering, you have no right to violate Lashon Hara. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can decide whether this is appropriate or not. And he could decide that, in order to learn the lessons, it's the right thing to do to record these things. But that's not something that a human being could do. And therefore, it would be usher. And he cites the example of post-Holocaust Germany. And he says, for example, if you were to really... pre-Holocaust Germany, if you're really to tell the story as it was, you would be in violation of Lashon Hara. It would be a big problem, and therefore you can't. Ad kan, Rav Schwab. Now, this theory, while interesting, does raise a number of questions. When it comes to the missing years, there's a question of how can you transmit a Masorah without being entirely truthful. Here he's not saying that you could be untruthful. You could simply omit. But we have another question, which is, for example, how do you deal with the various stories in the Gemara that do, in fact, seem to portray great people in sometimes an unflattering light. There's a tshuva from the Chavos Yair, which I think they reprint in the backs of some of the Chavetz Chaims. Maybe it's the back of the Mishmar. The Chavetz Chaim said it should be reprinted, in which he sort of goes through a lot of the places that it seems like in the Gemara that various Tanaim or Amoraim were doing something wrong, and it says, maybe this really isn't wrong, But there's an interesting line in Nefesh HaChaim and Nefesh HaChaim writes, it's regarding a certain story in Maseches Kiddushin about Rav Amram Chasida, and he says like this. He says, "Vanira hagam shakadosh baruch hu chas al kavodan shel tzadikim, im kol zeh kavua lahay uvda b'talmud, lahoros lanu darkei Hashem ayisharim." In other words, there are lessons to be learned. And the Gemara does sometimes include non-flattering things. And maybe Rishonim as well. Okay? You have to learn halachos. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky pointed out, this is, it's printed in Emes LeYaakov Bereishis Perek Lamed Zayin, that, and this is a bigger topic, but saying negative things about those who aren't alive isn't a formal violation, he argues, of Lashon Hara. It violates the cherem of the Gaonim, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and there's a cherem kadmonim about saying inappropriate things, but could be that the halacha in terms of what's considered l'toeles is slightly different when it comes to someone who isn't alive. And there, it's not so pasha to say that it would be aser al lashon hara, certainly where there's a toeles. So, okay, well, what about the story of Hanukkah? That doesn't work. So, Rabbi Eli Rohn Levinson showed me another approach to this, interesting, another approach given by Rav Shlomo Brevda in the Sefer Lehodos Ulahalal on Hanukkah. Here's an interesting theory, which is translated by Rabbi Levinson into English, if you want to see it. Excellent, excellent work. And he suggests that Chazal concealed the story of Hanukkah to protect us from reading potentially harmful material. In a sense, it's similar to what Rav Schwab says, but slightly different. Not alts lashon hara. And as a precedent, he quotes interesting Ramban. We actually referred to the Ramban a little earlier when we did Bechiras Yisrael Memaral. The Ramban asks the Shaila, why is it that the Torah omits Avraham's early life? After all, he, the story of Or Kasdim, etc., etc. You know, why is it omitted? And why is it, for example, like we noted, that it doesn't tell us why Avram was chosen, like it tells us about Noah? And he said, Ramban says basically that to tell those stories, we'd sort of have to get into the details of Avodah Zarah and the debates that Avraham Avinu had with the Kaifrim. If you wanted to tell the story of Or Kasdim and how Avraham was thrown into the fiery furnace or whatever exactly happened, you have to tell about these debates. You know, what was Avraham saying? What were the idolaters saying? And that's not good for us to know. He quotes along similar lines the comments of the Chassid Yaivitz on Pirkei Avos, Parakei Mishnah Beis. Why didn't the Torah tell us about Avram's being saved at Or Kasdim? And he says that it wants to teach us, you know, if it would have included the arguments that Avram Avinu made, that you should believe in Hashem, you know, Avram Avinu, like the Rambam says, offered a philosophical argument, but we don't. We're not supposed to believe in Hashem because of philosophical arguments. That's not the ideal form of emunah. So again, the Torah omitted it. But very similar to this point. Basically, if we were to include the story of Hanukkah, then that could be harmful to us or some of us. And the truth is that, you know, when everyone learns the story of Hanukkah, except for people who study more serious history, they learn the nice parts, and they don't learn the not-so-nice parts. Very few people learn when they're learning about Hanukkah, like, you know, what happened after that initial victory, and to, you know, the miracle of the Pach HaShemen. You know, the Ramban sort of alludes to it a little bit in his Perasha LaTorah, you know, about how things didn't turn out so good and why the Hasmonean kings weren't the biggest tzaddikim. Ramban has his theory because they didn't relinquish the Malchus and return it to Beis David. But, you know, very few people, you know, when they learn about Hanukkah, tell the story. We pick like little bits and pieces that are very inspirational. You know, why not? So It's not just Rav Bravda suggests because, we didn't get around to it, but it's because this information would be harmful. So again, similar to Rav Shwar says, not because Lashon Hara, he's saying because it's harmful. Again, I think that there is a lot of merit to this position, but still not so pashut. Lamashal, to highlight the complexity, even though the Torah Shebichsav, like Ramban notes, doesn't tell us the story of Avram's early life, but Chazal do, right? So there's not a... It's not like it's totally hidden. So again, I think that, we've seen maybe three theories, related theories. And I think there might be about why we don't have that story of Hanukkah in the traditional sources. And I think they might... There is truth to all three of them. But I also don't think that they fully address the question. I'd like to add three additional factors. Still not sure it'll fully answer the question, but I think all three of the factors I'm going to suggest is... I think sort of give you a different type of perspective, though somewhat related. In terms of the question of why these things aren't included in the Gemara, in Chazal and the like, why there isn't history in Chazal, in so many of the traditional sources. So I think the answer is that the Torah focuses on things that are inherently valuable and not just things that have practical utility. If you remember, we saw a little bit earlier the comments of the Maharal. The Maharal was dealing with the question of Torah and science, and he said, people have tainos against Chazal for factual errors in their science. And the Maharal said, that's because Chazal weren't doctors and they weren't scientists, and that wasn't their goal. Their goal was, the way the Maharal put it, was not to tell us the reason, but the reason behind the reason. When Chazal were telling us about Ramach, Evarim, and Shesag Yidim, they weren't like telling you practical information about the anatomy of a human body, but they were teaching us about the reason behind the reason and the connection between person's body and mitzvos, and how mitzvos create a tikkun in the body. When the Torah tells us about the association between the rainbow and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not destroying the world again when we mess up, it's not telling us the scientific reason for a rainbow. It's not like this is the reason and not refraction, but it's telling us the reason behind the reason, or the way the Maharal puts it, is why did the HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a certain reality in which the light refracts through the raindrops to create the appearance of a rainbow. And that's not to say it's not valuable. In other words, there is valuable in studying medicine, but you're not going to use a Gemara to figure out how to study medicine, because that's not the interest in the Gemara. Now, you have to address the fact that the Gemara does sometimes tell us things about medicine, and that's an interesting question, not for now. It might force us to tweak exactly what we're saying, but for now we'll leave that question for the moment. That's the primary interest. The way the Maharal puts this is the Torah is interested in that which is inherently valuable, not which is mikra. And the same thing with respect to a discussion of past events. Certain stories are very valuable in terms of, again, they teach us about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they teach us about Hashkacha, they teach us about Midos and the like. Other aspects of our history are interesting, and we're not saying that they're not valuable, but they're mikra, and as such they don't belong in Torah. But just because it doesn't belong in Torah, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's of no value. If you look, just again, maybe a small reflection of this back at that Rush, when Rush on the first source, on the first page, was arguing with Rashi and Chulin, he writes this point. In other words, the problem is with Rashi is that it's a baya b'shas, not that it happened. That's not our interest. That's point number one. Point number two, and again along very similar lines, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us from the very beginning of our being a nation that we are, or at least we can be, above history. Same it's Dagnino Shafa. Human history, studying history, focuses on secular causation. And the Jewish people merit a unique type of hashgacha. Ein mazel b'Yisrael means not so much that there's no such thing as mazel. It's clear from that Gemara that says, Ein mazel b'Yisrael, the Gemara at the end of Shabbos, that there is such a thing as mazel. The Gemara thought so. But that it means we are not limited, bound, or constrained by our mazel. If history reflects teva, then we, as a people, are lemala min hateva. And therefore, while I think this idea in no way precludes the study of history, it does partially explain its lack of prominence. Because to some degree, the studying of history is the study of teva, and Klal Yisrael is not part of teva. It's not part of history. Again, going back to that other maral we saw a couple of weeks ago, that we can rise as a people above nature. We're not limited and bound by nature. And therefore, studying history, and certainly its placement in traditional sources, might be omitted because of that very important point. Finally, number three, a point that I think we've said in other contexts, that hashgacha is such that certain chachmos and certain concepts developed at certain points when they did. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed certain aspects of, let's say, Torah Sasot to develop, to emerge, to be revealed at certain points in the world, right? The Arizal changed the world in terms of understanding Torah Ha'emes, for example. It didn't happen before then. It happened when it did, because that was the right time. And I think, like we said before, in the world of Nigla also, you know, the Rishonim, the Baalei HaTosfos, changed the way we learn. And so did Reb Chaim, each one at its own time. And the fact that certain things developed at certain points, whether it's the rationalist school in Rishonim, or the Kabbalistic schools, or the Pilpul schools, or whatever it is. And there is a certain, for whatever reason, sometimes we can guess and speculate, but we need not do so. Hashgacha is such that Hashem wanted this focus on Jewish history to develop when it did. And the fact that that it did at this point, and the fact that now many people do study Jewish history and I think may gain a lot of valuable insights in terms of understanding who we are now and by understanding our past, the fact that that wasn't done in the past doesn't in and of itself indicate that it's no value. It has no value. And that's why there have been great Talmidei Chachamim over the last century or two who have engaged in the study of history. And I think we are very much enriched by their contribution. And it's not necessarily the case that we always say that just because something wasn't done in the past indicates that there's no value. Okay, I see there are a lot of questions, so I'll try to take some of them. Sorry? You had your hand up before.
I'm not sure how this necessarily fits in, but maybe you could, could you elaborate on why, you sort of did already the specific reference to the Book of the Maccabees, why we rejected that?
I didn't say we reject it. What I said was it's not part of the traditional curriculum. It's a complex work. Both of them are a complex work. There's actually the same with Megillas Chashmonai in the book of both versions of the Book of Maccabees. They're complex works. In terms of studying them, I think there is value in studying them for the right person at the right time who has the kalim to be able to deal with the complexity. They're not... Studying these works can help us understand much better the story of Hanukkah, but they add a complexity and to the story that isn't appropriate for all audiences. And that's why I think, to a large degree, they're not traditionally studied. When it comes to pedagogy, so you have to know when to introduce certain ideas, and when you're teaching children, for example, who aren't ready to appreciate nuance and sophistication, they're not intellectually ready, if you teach them certain sources, they won't really know how to process them. And it's likely that they can process them in the wrong way and come away with the wrong lesson. So the traditional makoros that tell us a story, so they help. If a person is older and more mature and they've studied much more Torah and they're able to appreciate nuance and look at the story in a more sophisticated way, then studying these sources can be very valuable.
Theologically, I presume we're divorced from any concept of it being anything other than a purely historical document.
But you have to know how to read a historical document. There's a story I saw that one of my rebbeim, I think, told me this actually, Rav Mendel Kaplan. So Rav Mendel learned in Baranovich. He was a big Talmud Chacham who came from Europe. And he came to America, he became a high school rabbi. Later he was in Philly, that's when my rebbeim were his students, earlier he was somewhere else. Anyway, so when Rav Mendel first came to America, so he was trying to learn English. And he also, had a good understanding, so such a good rabbi, of the Talmidim in front of him, American boys who weren't so interested in learning Gemara. So he told them, "I'll make a deal with you." He brought in a newspaper, or maybe, I don't know, somebody else brought in a newspaper, and he was there. He said, "You tell me, you teach me English, you tell me what it, what the words say, and I'll tell you what it means." Right? And that's, I think, a very important point. In other words, to be able to read the newspaper or a history book or the like from a Torah perspective, to be able to get the facts but then know how to interpret them, is something that requires a broad understanding of Torah and Torah values. And if you lack that, you could make mistakes. And, you know, one might add, especially, you know, modern historical works take it as axiomatic that you can't ever talk about God. In other words, you're always looking for secular causation. There's no place for hashgacha. It's also true that in many, many historical works, certainly those in the 19th century and early 20th century, there is a strong anti-religious bias. And what's presented as facts are often not facts. And certainly there's an agenda. You know, Abraham Geiger once stated explicitly that his whole purpose of Jewish historical scholarship was to prove that everything that presently exists at some point came into being and therefore possesses no binding force, right? So what was the motivation of studying, you know, modern historical Jewish scholarship, Wissenschaft and the like, right? It wasn't just like pure history lishma. It was to show, look, this is all made up, and therefore, you don't have to do it anymore. So, if you aren't prepared, if you're not able to discern what's real and what's fake, there's huge distortions in so many classical historical papers or books, huge distortions, oftentimes stemming from the fact that the authors didn't really understand how Torah halacha works. And again, someone without those skills will not be able to understand that. And that's why you have to be careful. Now, as I said, Baruch Hashem, there are historians, there have been historians who were great Talmidei Chachamim. You know, in more recent times, you know, Rabbi Dr. Isidore Twersky and Yibadal L'Chaim, Rabbi Dr. Rechaim Soloveitchik, who, let's say, in the realm of history of halacha, went ahead and showed, on the one hand, in such a compelling way, the innovations of halacha are indeed innovations, and oftentimes responses to the circumstances that the Jewish people found themselves in, but also at the same time are truly and authentically rooted in the tradition. They're not outside of the system or against the system, but they're within the system. So there are Baruch Hashem works that address these questions, and we could use these tools. But again, there's, you know, we have to be honest in assessing the danger and therefore making sure a person is ready to be able to answer these questions. If you're not yet ready, then you have to make sure that you have a teacher who's going to present the material in a way that is true, Torah true, and not in a way that's anti-Torah. And more importantly, I think what I was saying before in the first two factors is to remember that while studying history is interesting and valuable and the like, but number one, we are l'mala min hateva, and number two is that we are more interested in that which is essentially true and less interested in that which is only Mikra. And if we go back to the story of Hanukkah, so I think that's, you know, the way in which the story comes down to us is all meant to highlight that point in terms of understanding the military victory of Rabin Biad Ma'atim, and then how the nace of the Pach HaShemen shows us that their victory wasn't just by chance, it wasn't just because they were more motivated or interested or, you know, had better tactics, but it was Biyad HaShem. And the nace of the Pach HaShemen is Megala, that the nais of the military victory was in fact a nais. Okay, so we'll stop here. We do have class next time. I'm not sure exactly how many shiurim we have left, because the following week, the Sunday of Hanukkah, we don't have class, and then at some point we need a bechina. So stay in touch for details about upcoming shiurim. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
I missed the first 10 minutes, so I feel really bad. But I was just wondering, I mean, I'm coming from some of the basic precepts of questions might be half-baked.
Shkayach.
A week and a half ago...
Do you want to do... Whose phone is this?
Ben.
I don't know, where is the... Well, you can bring it up here.